South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza. This program is recorded via remote, and here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, April 9, 2020. South Sudan's President Salva Kiir confirms a third case of COVID-19 in South Sudan.
So far, we have three confirmed cases of COVID-19, all from the people who have traveled to Juba and Torit from COVID-19 infested countries.
Civil society activists say South Sudan's porous borders poses a high risk during the fight against the coronavirus.
There are people coming from Yei, Ahaya border. They come through Panyume. They come through Bazi. They come through Lasso. Because COVID-19 is a very serious disease, it is not something that to be joked with.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir confirmed a third case of COVID-19 in South Sudan. Speaking to journalists in his office in Juba on Thursday, Mr. Kiir says a 28-year-old staff of the United Nations tested positive for the coronavirus. For VOA News, Lasuba Memo has more from Juba.
President Kiir announced the third confirmed case of COVID-19 in South Sudan in an address to the nation today.
So far, we have three confirmed cases of COVID-19, all from the people who have traveled to Juba and Torit from COVID-19 infested countries. So practically, COVID-19 is in Juba and Torit, and we must prevent it from spreading across the country.
Mr. Kiir says the Health Ministry's rapid response team is working to trace the people who were in contact with the three confirmed cases so they can collect blood samples for testing. Makur Koryom, the undersecretary in South Sudan's health ministry, says the third case was among people who were in contact with the first COVID-19 case, a 29-year-old UN staffer who traveled from the Netherlands by way of Ethiopia to South Sudan on February 28. The woman showed no signs of the virus when she entered South Sudan. Koryom says a newly confirmed case presented symptoms associated with COVID-19 weeks after traveling to Torit from Juba. He says the infected individual was notified of her condition after she tested positive for the virus.
She has been informed. She's in isolation. She's in good health, and she doesn't have any underlying medical condition. So far, we have enlisted five of her contacts, and our team is working to locate more contacts. In total now we have, as you heard earlier from His Excellency the President, we have 65 contacts of the three, and our teams are still working to identify more contacts. We are also watching the list of people who came with the first contact on the flight on 28th of February. And of course, they will be under watch list. Say that if anything happens, we can act timely.
Makur says five people in Torit who were in contact with the third confirmed case will be tracked down so that samples can be taken from them for testing. In his message ahead of the Easter festival, President Kiir called on the public to strictly follow government directives to contain the spread of the virus, including social distancing.
The preventive measures the task force has put in place will interfere with your daily livelihood. It will restrict large gatherings at funeral places, churches, and social events, and above all, deprive you of the freedom to celebrate and enjoy the Easter festivity. I sincerely sympathize with you in all of that, but I urge you to respect the strict and strictly follow the directives and advice of the task force. These measures are intended to protect rather than harm you.
Kiir says the government released $2 million to the health ministry to support efforts to prevent the spread of the virus in the country. He warned the public that the preventive measures will have a serious impact on what he calls the country's fragile economy. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
Community leaders and civil society activists in Yei River County of Central Equatoria State accuse the government of doing very little to stop people from crossing into South Sudan from the neighboring Uganda and the Democratic Republic of Congo through porous borders. Daniel Friday Martin reports for VOA from Yei Town.
There are at least 15 porous entry points along Yei River County's borders with Uganda and DR Congo, including Busia, Tamania Teletin, Bazia Ondako, Isebi, Lasso, and Kirikwa. Kenyi Elisa is a community leader in the High Peace residential area of Yei Town. Elisa says people continue to enter Yei River County from Uganda and DR Congo. Both of those countries have several confirmed cases of COVID-19. Elisa says people that enter South Sudan illegally through porous entry points are never screened or quarantined as required by the government's directives aimed at stopping the spread of the pandemic.
There are people coming from Yei, Ahaya border. They come through Panyume. They come through Bazi. They come through Lasso. Because COVID-19 is a very serious disease, it is not something that to be joked with. The government and the NGOs, they should secure funding in order to do house-to-house awareness raising.
Justus Onvicta, an activist working for the Yei-based NGO Yamora, says local authorities are not stopping the illegal entry of people into Yei River County and health officials are not tracking down those people and place them under quarantine.
We are not having a well-oriented team that is doing testing and doing tracking for the movement of the people. And I would like to appeal that the local chiefs need to be well informed so that they will refer anybody who is coming new to be fast checked by the health authorities.
While the government has shut down official border crossing points, Victor says some security forces accept bribes from travelers and allow them to cross into South Sudan, something he says increases the risk of spreading COVID-19. Dr. James Wani, Director General in the defunct Yei River State Health Ministry, says state officials don't have the funding to screen all travelers who come into Yei Town through South Sudan's porous borders.
As a ministry, any person coming from outside into Yei Town, he or she must undergo health screening, and we are calling on the community leaders to inform us on the movement of people from the shortcut routes.
MP Bidale Moses, who represents Yei River County in the National Legislative Assembly, urged the National COVID-19 Task Force to ramp up preventive measures in the Yei area.
I'm calling upon the national government task force. We need more intervention than what is happening in Juba, because the risk is now here, because I've seen it, and we need to have people there very seriously to monitor the situation. And I need more testing equipment to each checkpoint.
Amule Felix, administrator for the defunct Yei River State Government, says he has asked the army and other forces to stop the illegal entry of people into the Yei area.
We have urged the SSPDF and other security organs at the borders to ensure that this movement is stopped and the borders are really, really sealed and closed. From now on, we don't want border riding, because we have discovered these borders, they ride up to the border, up to the Panya roads.
Amule is also appealing to the humanitarian organizations operating in the area to support the government's efforts to combat the spread of the virus. For VOA News, I am Daniel Friday Martin in Yei.
Commuters are complaining about the government's ban on motorbike taxis or boda-boda and restrictions on the number of passengers in public transport vehicles as part of the government's effort to combat the spread of the coronavirus. Commuters say transport fares have jumped and boda-boda drivers say they won't make any money if they follow the directives. Manyang David Mayar has this report for VOA from Juba.
A taxi conductor invites potential passengers to board his vehicles in Juba's Shirkat neighborhood as they go to work. It is an 8-seater van which now can only carry 4 people under the directives announced by South Sudan's high-level task force for COVID-19. Similarly, a vehicle licensed to carry 14 passengers can now carry only 7 passengers. Onen Isaac, the driver of public transport vehicle, says he loses money every day under the new restrictions.
We are taking only 5 passengers. It is actually affecting because it is not bringing the same amount that we are getting. We try to increase the money, but even passengers even are complaining a lot. Like now in one vehicle, if you say that you should take 150, you will see passengers complaining a lot.
To compensate, Onen says most taxi drivers and drivers of the government-owned Bongo Bus have increased their fares. Commuters complain the drivers have shifted their burden by hiking transport fares. Speaking in Arabic, commuter Manyok Makir, one of the commuters, says, unlike these days, he spends practically all of his daily earnings on getting to and from work.
Transport is now very expensive. Raksha is now 400 SSP for two people. Bongo Bus used to be 50 SSP and now it is 100 SSP. Now it's 250 SSP. This is so painful for us. Most of us feed on daily income and that is all spent on transport. Nothing remains for home consumption.
Commuter Elizabeth Amor says a taxi driver recently forced her to pay for her seat as well as the empty one next to her. Speaking in Dinka, Amor says she's very worried about the future.
When I came in the morning, I paid double bus fare. And now I will walk back home because the money I had budgeted to take me back home was all taken for only one way. I am very worried about this rise in the public transport. Hunger is looming.
Even though the government has banned the use of border borders, hundreds of border border drivers are back in the street anyway, saying they are willing to take the risk of being arrested in order to earn a living. Speaking Arabic, border border driver Christopher Iwang Emmanuel said it is a choice of working and possibly catching the virus or going hungry.
We do not have any other work apart from border border. It is this business that we feed our families daily. We know that coronavirus is dangerous disease, but we have to put our life in God's hand.
Juba border border driver Santino Makui says his biggest fear is hunger, not the coronavirus.
Hunger is immediate danger that I am feeling now. And I can see it approaching, but for the virus, I cannot see it and do not know where it is coming from.
Makui and the other drivers in Juba say if the government provided their families with food, they would comply with government's restrictions on public transport. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, World Health Organization warns world leaders to put politics aside. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. Question today.
How can you help someone dealing with depression?
I just give my time to that person and we discuss matter concerning that depression which that person is facing.
First of all, I'll find out what is depressing that person. And when I find out the root cause, of course, I try to advise the person according to what he or she is going through.
By counseling the person through counseling and then sharing ideas. Maybe sometimes going out for football or watching football, movies, such things can also help.
I recommend music therapy. Music therapy in the sense that music has a way of giving a soothing feeling whenever the person listens to music.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The Director General of the World Health Organization is warning nations not to politicize COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said Wednesday that only national and global unity will defeat the virus. Close to 1.5 million people have the infection, which has claimed lives of around 87,000 others. Lisa Schrein reports for VOA from Geneva.
WHO Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says the body bags from the dangerous infection are piling up. He says nations should not waste time pointing fingers to score political points, but instead should unite to defeat this disease.
The focus of all political parties should be to save their people. Please don't politicize this virus. If you don't want many more body bags, then you refrain from politicizing it. My short message is, please quarantine politicizing COVID.
Tedros made his remarks a day after U.S. President Donald Trump threatened to cut WHO's funding. The president said the health agency was too slow in reacting to the pandemic and that it was too China-centric. He was implying the WHO might have done so out of deference to China, where the coronavirus was first reported. During remarks at the White House, Trump said the United States is going to put a very powerful hold on money it sends to the organization. He says the WHO called it wrong. Trump later backtracked on the funding threat, saying we're going to look at it. The U.S. is the largest contributor to the organization. Tedros says he does not waste his time thinking about personal attacks against him when there are so many other serious issues that need to be tackled. Tedros says he prefers to spend his time focusing on saving lives.
I can tell you personal attacks that has been going on for more than 2-3 months. Abuses or racist comments, giving me names, black or negro. I'm proud of being black or proud of being negro, because maybe for the first time I would make this public, even death threat.
Tedros says there's nothing personal about COVID-19. He says everyone in the world is in this together. He says the United States and China should come together to fight the dangerous enemy. He adds the G20 and the rest of the world also should come together to join the fight. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Kenya this week extended quarantine by 14 days for people held in centers where coronavirus has been detected. The extension has not been received well by those held in the centers or rights groups, who say the government is treating them like prisoners. But health authorities say the measures is indeed to prevent the virus from spreading unchecked. Lenny Rubaga reports for VOA from Nairobi.
Kenyan rights groups issued a call to government transparency on people held in coronavirus quarantine centers. A signed statement released Tuesday by 24 groups expressed concern after authorities extended the quarantine period by 2 weeks in centers with confirmed infections. Alan Maleche is the executive director at Kellen, a Kenyan group that advocates for health rights.
The civil society consortium is calling the government to action because the government has not been forthcoming with information to those who have been held in mandatory quarantine. The government has not been clear on who's paying for the cost. The government has not been clear on when people are supposed to be tested. So generally we are concerned that information is not being availed to people who are held in quarantine.
Kenya has designated 57 quarantine centers in Nairobi and Mombasa, hosting hundreds of people at their own cost. Jaylene, who for privacy does not wish to use her real name, has been at a Nairobi quarantine facility for more than 2 weeks. While she has shown no symptoms, Jaylene says she will have to stay 2 more weeks because the center had a confirmed infection.
We haven't had even a single word about whether or not the further 14 days will be paid for by the government.
Some have complained also about the sanitation in Kenya's quarantine centers. John, not his real name, has also been in another Nairobi quarantine center for more than 2 weeks.
The conditions here are deplorable. In a floor, we are like 30 people sharing 3 toilets and 3 bathrooms. The toilets don't flush, so we have to use buckets. So if there's any place we can contact the disease, it's in these facilities.
John says that no one in his quarantine center has tested positive for the coronavirus. His claim could not be independently verified. Kenya's health ministry says it is aware of the inconvenience of quarantine, but maintains it is in the interest of protecting the public. Kenya's Director General of Health, Dr. Patrick Amoth, on Tuesday defended the extended quarantine period while speaking to the media in Nairobi. He said it was the government's responsibility to ensure anyone released was free of the virus.
We want to assure you again, especially those who are in quarantine, to ensure that you follow the social distancing rules, the infection prevention control measures, the hand washing, and very soon we are going to again check on you after the 10th day to see if you are negative. Working together with the county governments, we shall be able to release you to go home and continue with self-quarantine.
The rights groups have urged greater transparency for the Kenyan government on its coronavirus quarantine centers. The statement noted it was not clear how many people are in mandatory quarantine in Kenya and how many of those have been tested for the virus. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
As the COVID-19 coronavirus outbreak worsens in the United States, African American people are being hit hard by the disease with disproportionately high rates of infection, hospitalizations, and deaths. One of the first U.S. cities to raise this alarm over this racial disparity was Milwaukee in the state of Wisconsin. VOA's Jason Patenkin has more.
The U.S. city of Milwaukee in the north-central state of Wisconsin reported its first COVID-19 infection March 13th. The city now has over 1,000 cases, but the data behind those numbers shows a disturbing trend. The city's health commissioner, Dr. Jeanette Kowalik, said African Americans make up only 37% of the Milwaukee population, but they're being infected, hospitalized, and killed by COVID-19 at much higher rates.
From week one, the percentage of African-American cases were, I think, about 70%. Now we're at about half. So African-Americans representing about half of the cases. But as far as people that are hospitalized due to COVID-19 infection, it's 62% African-American individuals, which is very high. And then as far as deaths, it's about 80%.
Similar trends are in cities around the country, from Detroit, Michigan to New Orleans, Louisiana. The Washington Post reported that in Chicago, Illinois, 68% of the city's COVID-19 deaths and 52% of its cases are among black people, despite black people making up just 30% of the city's population. Kowalik said the phenomenon reflects long-standing racist policies and practices toward African Americans in the U.S., leading to negative health outcomes. She said the higher rate of COVID-19 cases mirrors that of other health problems among African Americans. Kowalik said the phenomenon reflects long-standing racist policies and practices toward African Americans in the U.S., leading to negative health outcomes. She said the higher rate of COVID-19 cases mirrors that of other problems among African Americans.
When you look at infant mortality, obesity, lead poisoning, when you look at violence, you see very similar distributions of disease and impact. Until we fix the underlying issues, we will continue to see these distributions, whether it's a natural disaster, whether it's a new outbreak, you name it. But when you have a group that has been chronically disadvantaged, and not by choice, but by force, that you're going to see these distributions today.
Kowalik said one of those underlying issues is lack of adequate housing for African American people, which forces more people to share the same roof in densely populated parts of cities, allowing COVID-19 to more easily spread. A legacy of discrimination in hiring, housing, and education has meant that about 22% of African Americans live in poverty, compared with 10% of whites. And in urban areas with large African American populations, there often is a shortage of high-paying jobs, trapping many in low-wage service industry jobs, including at grocery stores, sanitation, and public transportation, which have been deemed essential services. That means that while most people stay at home during COVID-19 lockdowns in the U.S., many black people are still going out for work, putting them at higher risk of contracting the virus. Kowalik said the disease is killing African Americans at higher rates than other groups because African Americans also have higher rates of underlying health issues, making them more vulnerable. She said this is also a legacy of long-standing racial inequities in America that has resulted in unequal access to proper health care and nutrition.
Heart disease or high blood pressure, diabetes, you know, we see African Americans suffering from these diseases that, you know, are rooted in these racist structures, policies, and practices. When you have these underlying conditions, you're more at risk for being hospitalized. You're more at risk for dying from COVID-19 infection than someone that doesn't have them.
The health commissioner said one way her city of Milwaukee is trying to overcome these inequities is by working to ensure that Black residents have enough necessities like food and medicine. That way, they won't need to risk infection by going out to work. She also encouraged businesses to allow sick workers to stay at home during the outbreak.
Don't let your sick people work. I know sometimes people are short-staffed and they really need everyone on deck, but don't risk infecting your entire workforce because you don't want to lose one person for a few days.
Kowalik stressed that everyone must take COVID-19 seriously, no matter their skin color.
Disease does not discriminate. Like when we have acute situations like this, whether it be coronavirus, any new virus, for instance, once it's new to a population, it's not discriminating. It can attack anyone that's a mammal.
COVID-19 has infected around 400,000 people in the U.S., killing about 13,000. Jason Patinkin for VOA News, Washington.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Aisha by Khalid.
Comme si tu n'existais pas. Elle est passée à côté de moi. Sans un regard, reine de Saba. J'ai dit Aïcha, prends tout est pour toi. Voici les perles, les bijoux. Aussi au retour de ton cou. Les fruits bien mûrs au goût de miel. Ma vie, Aïcha, si tu m'aimes.
Been listening to Khalid with the song Aisha. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for listening and remember to stay at home, wash your hands with soap, keep social distance and stay safe from the coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
T
تمنيت ان عايش معك غير انتي عايشه عايشه اكو تموا